Welcome to Harlow on Healthcare. I'm David Harlow, and I invite you to join me by my virtual hearth as I sit down with healthcare leaders to discuss building the future of healthcare. Today, my guest is Richard Hausman, PhD, President and Chief Executive Officer of Elekta. Elekta is a healthcare equipment manufacturer. And Dr. Hausman has worked for many years in different roles in other companies as well. Welcome, Richard, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
So, Richard, I'd appreciate your giving us a little bit further background on Elekta. May not be a household name around the U.S., or it may be in certain quarters, but I'd like to understand the range of the products that you're offering here and elsewhere, and who your customers are.
Okay, I'm happy to do so. So Elekta is a company based originally in Sweden, and we are developing, producing, and selling and installing radiotherapy equipment and software to actually allow the best workflow for those radiotherapy systems at our customer sites. We have 4,000 employees all over the world. Only a minority is still Swedish of 250, but we are very present in the United States, in Sunnyvale with our software development, St. Louis software development as well. And we have locations in UK where our linear accelerators are produced and shipped, as well as China, where we have also a factory and some software and hardware development departments. Our goal as a company is to provide what we call precision radiation medicine. Precision radiation medicine. These are the three key words for us to our customers, the radiotherapy department of hospitals or freestanding radiotherapy centers all around the world.
So let's go a little bit further into that, a little deeper. When you say precision radiation medicine, what are we talking about exactly? I mean, I understand in general terms of radiation therapy as a patient. I hope that it had always been applied with precision. But I understand that means something new today. And sort of I'd like to understand sort of the evolution to the current moment and where you see opportunities in the future as we're combining some of these technologies with artificial intelligence and other computer-assisted technologies.
There are three words: precision radiation medicine. And radiation, take the middle one, is basically our core competence. The idea how to deliver a lethal dose of radiation to the tumor, to the cancer, and save as much as possible healthy tissue around or on the way to the tumor is basically what we have as our core competence. We can do that. We have the technology means, we developed the innovations over the last, 20, 30 years to make it as precise as possible, to shape the doses, the beam towards the tumor from all different angles, to shoot from different angles, to basically sum up the dose only at the center of the tumor, whereas on the way through the healthy tissue have minimal dose, which almost doesn't affect the healthy tissue. You have to know that this radiation delivery many years ago started with very unspecific delivery, like a square target, so to say, was used to shoot. And the idea was that by geometric location of the patient in this beam, it was basically hitting the tumor. But of course, by this simplistic technology, it was also hitting healthy tissue quite significantly. And over time, we got more and more precise by so-called collimators, multi-leaf collimators. It's a technical word, but what it does in principle, it just shapes the beam to the form of the tumor. And over years and years, and we were really pioneering a lot of these developments as Elekta, we got it to the point that the shaping is almost perfect. The problem, however, is to create the first word, namely the precision. The problem is that you sometimes don't know exactly if the tumor is still at the same place where you have measured it before in your computed tomography scanner, and afterwards do all the sessions for radiotherapy on the assumption that the tumor didn't move, didn't change shape, and so on and so forth. And this is the challenge of today. And we have also solutions to address this challenge, namely to combine now the imaging with the treatment, and combine even not only a CT scanner with the treatment, but also an MRI scanner with the treatment. Why MRI? Because MRI is a magnetic resonance imaging. It's a very smart technology to visualize soft tissue and even moving tissue. And that is a real pioneering act. And that creates now suddenly the precision so that you shrink this target region to the real tumor and even track and adapt to the shape changes. For example, if you do a prostate irradiation, prostate cancer irradiation, there's an organ like the bladder very close by, or the bowel. You want to avoid those organs. Don't irradiate them. But if the bladder is full or empty, then the shape of the prostate and the location of the prostate changes. So you have to adapt to it. And we have now pioneered that in the last few years. And that's why we call ourselves now precision radiation. And then the third word is medicine. And the medicine word brings together two components of our product portfolio, which is one, this is this delivery system, which I explained now a bit, this linear accelerators, this radiation beam generation, so to say, with the software, which helps our customers, the doctors and the oncology departments, to create an optimal workflow for the patient. Because as we all know, cancer treatments are typically not only radiation only or surgery only or chemotherapy only. No, they are typically combinations of individual different events which are helping each other to optimize the treatment. And for that, we have developed a software which combines all these medical aspects of cancer treatment in a workflow. And there, by the way, also you said Elekta is maybe not known in the United States as a household name. That's true. But we have run about 40-45% of the software driving oncology institutes in the United States is with Elekta.
I'm intrigued by the issue of the moving target. And I'm wondering, I mean, you explained very clearly how that could come up in a certain context, a certain disease state. Is that a significant issue across different kinds of cancers?
Yes, indeed it is. And there are two aspects to it. One aspect is that, let's keep the example of the prostate. If you do a prostate treatment, typically you do it in so-called 25 to 30 fractions. So you treat not once with a whole big dose, but that would be too burdensome for the body and especially for the healthy tissue around it. So you do it in 25 to 30 parts every day, like a whole month you treat. You treat with a rather large number of fractions because you want to slice, so to say, the dose in many pieces. Why? Because you typically, in the old way of doing it, you basically take a little bit larger volume to irradiate. Why? Because you have to compensate for the fact that maybe the prostate has moved a bit. And to kill really all cancer cells, you have to kind of make a compromise to irradiate a little bit more. Now, with this new technology, knowing exactly where the tumor is at the point of treatment, you can shrink the zone, so to say, which you do more than necessary to the real tumor size. And then you can escalate the dose. You can put more dose into one shot, which then finally results, for example, in a treatment in only 5 days, because you can do like 5 to 6 times the dose which you have done before, because the cancer should get as much dose as possible. These cells, they should get it and they can bear it and they die with it, but the healthy tissue is not affected anymore. So that's a very much more faster treatment possible and more precise at the same time. That's one part of it. The second part of it, where it creates a total advantage actually, is if you have a situation where other very sensitive organs, also sensitive in the sense towards radiation, are extremely close by and there's a complex anatomy. For example, esophagus carcinoma. where you have cancer in the neighborhood of the ascending aorta, of the spinal cord, because everything is in the center. That's also possible now with this new imaging methods where the soft tissue is completely differentiated out and you can really target it. So in other words, suddenly you can do other tumors which you usually don't address with radiotherapy now. Because in the past, there was either not operable or surgical operable with all the consequences. Now you can non-invasively do this. At least the proposal is there. I mean, still on kind of in the introduction phase. And then there need to be studies being executed, of course, on the efficiency and outcome. But the value proposition of it and the first results we get from our clinical partners are extremely promising. And that is actually increasing now, not only increasing the coverage of radiotherapy for different types of tumors.
If you're just tuning in, this is Harlow on Healthcare, coming to you on Healthcare Now Radio. I'm David Harlow, and my guest today was Richard Hausman, President and CEO of Elekta. The innovations that you're talking about require not only development and testing within the company, but obviously clinical testing in the field with clinical partners. And I'm curious to understand whether these are sort of longstanding clinical relationships, or do these get developed for individual studies, or how do you work that both in the investigation phase and in the sort of clinical phase, clinical collaborations?
Yeah, that's a very good question. For the so-called MR-Linac, this combination of this MRI imaging and the linear accelerator, you can imagine the physics requirement and the technology requirement to combining those two technologies was non-trivial. These are
the two machines. That's an understatement.
I would agree with you. These two machines are actually in principle hate each other because one is a big magnet. And the other one is a moving electron beam which generates the radiation, and there was quite some engineering and some smartness necessary to bring that together in a way that it can be simultaneously done to beam and to see the tumor moving, and that was quite a challenge, and that was mostly developed with the University Hospital of Utrecht in the Netherlands, because our magnet comes from Philips, and we combined that with our linear accelerator, and this University Hospital of Utrecht was very, very instrumental to make this, together with our engineers, a working system. But then, after that, we worked a lot with clinical partners all around the world, including the United States and Canada and the UK. And the main topic of the research was, of course, to find out, is one system influencing the other system, for example, technology-wise? And we were really happy to see a few years ago that both systems were completely independent of each other, which was, of course, technology designed in. Yeah? Then the second point was, what benefits, what clinical benefit, what outcome benefits do we expect, and how can we prove those? And for those studies, if you will, we have formed a consortium of seven pioneering sites. For example, the Medical College of Wisconsin in Milwaukee was one of the partners. MD Anderson was the other partner. And Chris is in the UK and a few more. And those partners basically have selected individually different applications, different cancers like the liver cancer or prostate or the pancreas, different applications of that system, and they do now studies. And what the new things about this study development is that, unlike in other technologies, in particular, for example, proton therapy, where there was no outcome study done before. There was a proposal, of course, but what it is good for, but it was never proven. We tried now with these partners to prove it in parallel with the introduction of the system. So because in today's world, it's all about outcome, and I hope you agree with me, because the outcome and the positive outcome in a sense for survival rates or for less side effects in these treatments is the key thing which rectifies, for example, a different reimbursement code for a new technology or even the fact that it's introduced. And that's what we are doing right now. We pool all the data together with our partners in one big database where each partner can access and can slice and dice the data set into different dimensions to publish and to make studies out of it. And it's quite well ongoing. We are very happy about this, like 2 years results now. And it clearly shows these two streams, which I tried to explain before, namely faster, more targeted treatments with less fractions. And the other one that you can also address cancers, which we have not able to address before with radiotherapy.
Richard, I'm interested in the reduction in the number of fractions that you described that's made possible just by better accuracy and understanding the line between tumor and the healthy tissue at the margins. And the research opportunities enabled by the data sharing that you're doing are also very encouraging. I'm wondering also whether beyond the study sites and collaborations that you have in place in that realm, how you are working with providers elsewhere to expand access. You've touched on that a little bit, I'm thinking about coding and reimbursement for different kinds of services. I'm hoping that in the long run, the net result of having a shorter term of treatment results in some sort of cost savings. So I imagine, at least initially, there's certainly a return that's needed on the investment in research and development. But expanding access, both in terms of patient populations within a geography and also expanding access to other geographies. How do you see that happening? Yeah. How do you get involved in that?
One of our biggest in this world of healthcare, probably in totality, but especially also cancer care and radiotherapy, is that basically 90% of the equipment installed to cure cancer with radiotherapy is only available for 20% of the population of the world. That is, of course, an unacceptable situation. And within the global compact of making healthcare accessible to everybody, we as a company even, and even personally me as a CEO, feel very much responsible for helping the world to make this fraction, this percentage different. And what we try to do there is basically bring, nevertheless, this precision systems to the world and not just low-quality systems. So what does that mean? There are two aspects to it which are important. One is that's the aspect of affordability of the system, of ease of installation in rural areas of Africa or wherever you go. And for that, of course, there's development necessary. And we are, for example, now in the near future introducing a new system which has this aspect of smaller footprint, easy installation, easy usable, and where also the users don't need to be so highly educated as in maybe other countries, because the system itself helps the user with, for example, support by IBM Watson and other artificial intelligence driven systems to make the right decision, to use the right protocols, etc. Another important aspect is, it was shown in studies already, that as long as you adhere to standards of care and follow the certain standards of care, the outcome improves. And that is one thing where we do a lot in software development as well, so that our customers get help to stay at the standard, to f- follow the standards and not do a lot of different things all the time. Of course, there is difference from patient to patient, but it is shown in simple things like breast cancer that there is a standard of care. And that is also something where you can create outcome without big machines, but just with software tools which help the clinicians. And finally, also, by the way, when you interact with the patients, for example, on an app with patient-recorded outcome, to really follow the standards of and see the side effects quicker and react to the effects to it. So I think there is a lot of components which you can do better on the software side. And we do quite something to reduce, so to say, the complexity of our treatment solution, but still keep the precision as high as possible, because we don't want to ship low quality systems to the third world. That's not the idea. But they should be affordable and usable and easy to use. That's basically what we're also working on in collaboration with a lot of customers all around the world.
Sure. So the affordability, the smaller footprint, et cetera, yeah. The smaller local needs for technical expertise are very appealing, as is the idea that you just mentioned of having a patient app and having that sort of feedback loop about side effects and so forth. Is that something that ends up being taken into account in the course of an individual patient's treatment?
Yes, that is what I call the personalization also. And if you go a little bit away from the radiotherapy when it comes to cancer and go into more chemotherapy or even immunotherapy, then, of course, there's an extremely high degree of personalization necessary. But even in radiotherapy, there are patients or there are tumor types which are basically resistant against radiation. There's no effect. They don't kill the cancer cells. So to know that in advance or early on in the therapy, of course, saves a lot of money to start with, but also saves a lot of burden to the patient. So I think a lot of personalization in these applications is a key aspect of the future. And then support it with decision-making support systems and artificial intelligence so that simple tasks like, oh, let's find the kidney and define it as a sensitive organ not to irradiate that can be done actually by smart software and doesn't have to be outlined in every image by the doctor themselves. Checked, of course, but there's a lot of help possible to get a better, a faster, optimal result. And I think that's a very important part of our development as a company when it comes to software, but also the whole field of cancer care, so that it's personalized, precise, and adaptable to the individual situation when side effects happen or even no effect is happening or things are changing, tumors are shrinking, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. So talk a little bit about this from the patient perspective. I guess there's always also the clinician perspective, which you just touched on, where there can be tools, including AI tools, that help on the clinician application of these tools. And it sounds like this is a help rather than the feared replacement of a clinician by the robot doctor. Do you have good uptake of these tools by clinical partners as opposed to opposition that sometimes is theoretical or sometimes real, clinicians being opposed to technological advances?
I'm a big fan of these new technologies, and we are innovation companies, so it's very very good that they. I think the CEO is in favor of those ideas, but I'm realistic enough to say that the clinicians will not be replaced by the artificial intelligence module or whatever. I'm actually sure about that. What I see coming is that there will be workflows defined where the clinicians need less time to come to this optimal result, being, for example, identifying sensitive organs, but also, for example, identifying what tumor really is and what not. And that is the hope, really. It is a help. It's a decision support. It is bringing the right information to the fingertip of the clinician and the treatment person, which excites me, really. It's not the replacement. My son is just getting to become a doctor. Actually, he's a doctor already. And it would be stupid to think to pay, so to say, for his education, knowing that he would be obsolete.
Yeah, that would not have been wise.
Okay. No.
So to wrap things up, Richard, I'll ask you my last question, which is, if you were to wake up tomorrow and find yourself 5 years in the future, what's one thing in healthcare that you would either hope or expect to find has changed dramatically?
If I reiterate this one number, this percentage of equipment, 90% is accessible for 20% of the human, of the people around the world, that's not acceptable. I really hope, and I would really love to wake up in 5 years from now, and maybe in 10, but in 5 years it would be great, that this is a 50-50 at least, and that would be the right tendency, which I would like to see, so that more people, independent of their income, independent where they are born, are really able to get the best treatment possible. And that's not only for our products important, it's also important for others, for chemotherapy and other topics, to really fight cancer much more effectively.
Well, that's a promising vision of the future. Thank you. You have been listening to Harlow on Healthcare. Join us at healthcarenowradio.com. Let's continue the conversation on building the future of healthcare together at #HarlowOnHC. I'm David Harlow, keeping the fire going and holding a seat open for you. Until next time.